If you run a business large or small, get ready to take a lot of notes. Because it's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of the Mind Your Business program here with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC. Here you pick us up live in the New York, New Jersey metro area and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. Well, what is the show all about? As you've come to know, it's about real ideas, real people, real businesses, real success stories on Real Radio 77 WABC. This show is about you. That's why it's called Mind Your Business. It's all about sharing business and marketing strategies to get you ahead in today's business world. Each week, we feature a high-profile guest and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Tonight's show, we have an incredible guest, Ira Zlotowicz, president and founder of Eastern Union Funding. His incredible perspective, as you'll hear during this interview, will get you ahead in today's business world. No question about that. You'll hear his great insights and knowledge all about the perspective of the real estate industry and many other facets of business because of his experience. It's easy to connect with me on LinkedIn. You could follow me on Twitter. You could like me on Facebook, Yitzhak Saflis, Yitzhok Saftlis. And by the way, the website for this program, WABCBizRadio.com, features links to the podcast. We've gotten a lot of feedback from the past shows. There was an incredible show with Josh Moore, the general manager of Uber, a number of weeks ago. We had Bill O'Reilly, Jessica Proud, and Dr. David Lieberman last week. If you want to hear those interviews, the podcasts are up, and they're available through that website, WABCBizRadio.com. And also, by following me in social media is the best way to find out who our next guests will be, because we let that information out on social media as soon as we know it. Well, again, with us in the studio, we have none other than Ira Zlotowicz, the founder and president of Eastern Union Funding. Some notes about Eastern Union. It's a private real estate mortgage company, and they actually, over the last few years, close approximately $3 billion of real estate transactions annually. They work with nearly 100 lenders. They specialize in all types of real estate, notably multifamily, mixed use, medical, single tenant, and again, in practically every single category. Recently, to meet surging demand, Eastern Union has established an equity division, and that now actually funds developments throughout the, primarily in the Eastern Seaboard, but as Ira will explain, throughout the nation. In 2014, Crain's New York listed Eastern Union as one of the top 50 fastest growing firms in the greater New York area. And Inc. 5000 listed Eastern Union as the number one fastest-growing commercial real estate firm in the United States. With that intro, we give a warm welcome to Ira Zlotowicz. Thank you, Ira, for being here.
Thank you very much, Yitzhak, for having us.
Wow. It's a real honor, treat that you're here. Actually, for me, it's a personal honor. I worked for your father at ArtScroll over 25 years ago and actually remain close to him till this day. How's he doing?
He's doing very well, thank you very much. I told him I was coming. He sends his regards to you.
Thank you.
And, you know, I said I feel like I'm getting old when I'm at the point that I know someone for over 20 years and 25 years. And
I hope he's tuned in.
Yeah. I know my mother is. You know? So you wish your parents are here.
That's
your father smiles, your mother believes it. You
know? Before we get into our discussion, I'd like to refer, the New York Times had an interview with you a few months back. And they asked you about your policy about handing out $2 bills at every meeting. Now, just for the listeners to know, when we came here, of course, you meet all types of personalities. And we happened to run into Ron Kuby in the hallway. And Ira hands him a $2 bill. And he's like, he couldn't believe this. And Ira, you were asked about this in the New York Times interview. Can you explain, what's this all about? I'm holding it in my hands right now. Miriam, get a picture of this so that people on social media could see that. A $2 bill in a plastic, I mean, this is a mint condition $2 bill. What is this all about?
So really, when marketing is all about making that impression, you know, over the years we always discussed how do you stand out, how do you differentiate yourself in a quality way, and you know, a lot of the marketing things we do together came, and we still, you know, our site, you know, you're revamping a brand new site for us again. So, you know, I go to many meetings, you go to networking events, you have that 3 seconds to make an impression. Someone leaves after a show, they have 100 business cards, they don't remember who you are. How do you stick out? And, you know, a lot of the meetings I go to, it costs money to get there. You know, I live in New Jersey, drive to many meetings in New York, you pay for gas, tolls. You come into the meeting, you know, you spend maybe $50 to get to some of these meetings. Sometimes take a client out to lunch. What could you do to differentiate? I'm in the money business. What could get to stick out? And, you know, I one time like this, you know, this aha moment came that you saw different pieces of different ideas and said, you know, what happens if we could put this all together? So we actually found that there's a company that people who collect money, they have these sleeves that they save their currency in. So you put a $2 bill in it. We gold stamp the cover of it. There's millions more where this comes from. And that became our business card. We slide the business card in. And everyone in the company, as they go to meetings, this is what they hand out. No one ever forgets us. We tell people the line is the first $2 are free. No points and interest. And it starts with points and interest. And ever since then, this became like the trademark that comes along with the business. And does it cost a lot of money every year? It does. The most expensive business card, but no one loses it. None of that. I walk into clients, they keep it on the desk, they pass it along, they talk to people about it, so we get that full value you know, from it. Some people take the meeting to say, you know, I heard about your $2 bills, how much am I making today? And every time they come, they ask for it. I have one cute story. There's a president of a bank, you know, takes the $2 bill. The next time I meet him, he says, I need another $2 bill. And I said, what do you need another $2 bill for? I mean, you spent it, you ran out of money, I mean, you're the bank, just go downstairs. So he tells me, you'll never believe it. I was here once at night late. I ordered in takeout, and they came to deliver. It's on the corporate account, but, you know, I didn't have any money. I used your $2 bill for the tip, so could you replenish it? And
you know, it reminds me, we had the honor of you presenting at our Bottom Line has a business conference every year, and you presented at it, the one that was last December. And there were three concurrent sessions. And everyone was kind of going to yours. Now, of course, you have great, you know, you have what to talk about and a great presentation. But, you know, we were like trying to get some people, you know, like, you know, it shouldn't be embarrassing for the other presenters. Maybe we can get some people. And, you know, everyone was talking. They're like, but wait, Ira's giving out cash. It was hard to get anyone in the other rooms. Mm-hmm. By the way, for the audience, again, as we always point out, get ready to take some great notes. That's part of George Flowers' line, and we appreciate that. Thank you to take great notes on this program. And there's going to be, as you just heard from Ira, this is just the beginning, but it's not just real estate advice, but even marketing advice. Moving on to the actual real estate industry, how would you explain the difference between a commercial mortgage and a residential loan?
So when just to keep it clear for the audience, I'm a commercial mortgage broker, which means that I just introduce people that are looking for mortgages, buying real estate or refinancing real estate with the lender. There's commercial mortgage brokers and residential mortgage brokers. When we discuss here now the word residential, it means homes, 1 to 4 family homes. So I don't work on homes. I do everything but homes. I do from land all the way up to any type of property type, the construction, the such. And the main difference that I find is, like, and I tell people is, why did you go into this business? Why didn't you go into the residential mortgage business? And I said the main difference is that the average person probably buys one home in their lifetime, and they take out a mortgage with a goal to pay off their mortgage as fast as possible. The goal is, if they have extra money every month, let me pay off that that mortgage if I can. And they never look to refinance. If the rates go down, they refinance. If, God forbid, they need money, they'll borrow more money. So the goal is that you deal with a customer one time, it takes out a mortgage, never again. Also, what's the average home in America? What's the cost? What's the mortgage? $400,000 mortgage, $600,000, $800,000. The real mega mansions typically get paid for in cash, so they don't take mortgages. On the commercial side of the business, the typical person who's buying a piece of real estate, they typically own multiple properties. They're always looking to borrow as much as they can so they could buy more real estate. So if I already have one client and I pick up a client, I could grow with that client and do every couple of years do a refinance when they cash out, irrelevant to the interest rate. They don't take a 30-year fixed mortgage. They take a 5-year fixed mortgage. So because of that, the interest rate is like an adjustable, basically. It's a 30-year payout, but every 5 years, 7 or 10 years, they refinance that. So from 50,000 feet up, that is the core difference. It's the mindset of the borrower. How many borrowers do you have? You know, you could love the service I did for you, but that's it. I did the home. How many friends do you have buying a home now or refinancing?
Right. Now, here's a question that I'm sure you get all the time, and you touched on it a moment ago. Why would an experienced commercial player, like you pointed out, someone who's constantly doing deals. He's done many deals in his lifetime, and he's developed his own banking relationships. How do they benefit by going to a firm like Eastern Union?
Just to go back, when I came into the business, I'm in the business now about 18 years, I had the same type of question. And the question is that if they, you know, you'd speak to some of the largest owners that do use a broker, why do they? And I spent, and that's, you know, one of the things I'm looking, you know, I'm rolling out a few new products of late and perfecting the...
We're going to get to that.
Right. And what I found is that from the main value, I did a survey with a lot of owners, and the main value is that I have relationships with not just, you know, one or two banks. I have relationships with hundreds of lenders we dealt with, knowing who's hot at that time. Who's aggressive? Who's interested in this product? Who needs to put out money? At what rates? What terms? Who allows all different parts of the business? So when I go to a large owner and I say, why do you use a broker? We actually did a survey. I said, why do you use a broker? For, you know, imagine I'm not coming to you from Eastern Union. I'm coming to you from the Mortgage Brokers Association. And I said, why do you use mortgage brokers? And the number, 10% gave an answer. And they said, I use a broker for two reasons. You get me the upfront value. You get me the best rate, the term. You create the auction. You know how to present the package, that first part. Plus, you take me all the way to the closing. I need your help to get to the closing. 90% told me that, and the other 90% comprised of two types of people. The 50% that actually don't use a broker. They go direct. Okay. But I said, is there a value? They said, sure there is. You know which bank is hot. But if you're going to only save me a dollar and then charge me $5 for the savings, in by commercial real estate mortgages, I get paid by the borrower, not by the bank. So I come to an owner, I say, listen, I'll save you money, or I'll provide this value, I'll get your deal closed, pay me. So he says, I don't think that the savings justifies your fee. The other 40% said, the value you bring me is you get me the best rate.
Right.
Once I'm using you, I have no choice. I stay till the end. So that's why I use a broker. So at the end of the day, we found out that 100% of people see the value in a broker to get them the best rate. We know which banks are active today, which banks are hot, which banks like this neighborhood, which banks don't have a problem stretch. Think the values are going up, so they'll stretch on the dollar. Which bank thinks rates are staying low, they'll give a longer-term rates at a lower rate. And that's the value. And 10% said, I need that, plus to the end of the line. So the value diminishes. The larger owners, as time goes on, they pay less and less for, they don't pay the full 1% fee we typically charge. They'll say, I'm doing a large deal, let me pay a little bit less than the normal fee. And only on a deal I'm providing the value add. But that's a very good question. I had the same question.
So now, do you actually have a particular pride, or you can count on more than one hand, the amount of people that initially, you know, gave you a run for your money, if you will? In terms of, no, I'm going to go direct to the bank. It's, you know, I don't really need Eastern Union. And, you know, they tested you once, and then they've held on.
Right. So that's obviously, that's what happens. And, okay. You know, obviously, it's like, you know, you talk about the New York Times interview before. You know, the bigger product, you know, what I mentioned there is that it all comes from God.
Right.
And going into the business that I'm in, and I encounter a lot of those situations where, you know, a person says, I'll go direct, and then there could be issues or not. But it's more not so much as the issues in the 11th hour that I couldn't have solved or he could solve himself. Mm-hmm. It's more that he thought he's going to get himself a better deal. You know, I asked, you know, some of the bankers tell me behind closed doors, and I say, can I quote you your name? And they say no. They say, we love borrowers who come direct. I said, why? You have to deal with. Because, yeah, we get paid more for it. They don't know who's the hottest bank down the block. So when I meet someone who goes direct, I know every time that I'm able as a broker to get him a better rate somewhere else. But if his rate is 4% and I get him to 3.98, doesn't justify my fee. Can I get him better? I could always get better just because this is what I do all day. Whatever your expertise is, you should be able to help somebody. But the question is, does it justify the fee to get it done? Take an example in travel. Mm-hmm. Someone goes on, you're buying tickets. Right. Do you use a travel agent? Do you not use a travel agent?
Right.
Every travel agent will tell you that almost any time they could probably save you money. And definitely over the course of a year. You do 10 trips a year, they'll save you net over the course of a year. Trip by trip, there might not be that value they're going to save you. In my case, it's the same thing. I know I could save them every single day. Over the course of a year, it blends the savings. Go out there, blends the savings. But deal by deal, he's going to say, listen, it's not enough today if I'm charging a full fee. And that's, you know, our hurdle was to, you know, what could we do with that information? How could I deal now with the 10% of people that appreciate both sides of the coin? How could I deal with the 90%?
And now, of course, this applies in every single business. I mean, you know, us as running a marketing firm, many times people will ask, let's say, about the printing. Let's say I'll do a whole brochure, et cetera, but I'm going to go use my own printer. And I always point out, besides the obvious aspect that if we handle it, we take the responsibility for it and we have to see it through to the finish line. But aside from that, because I know which printer specializes in what type of project, so right away I'm able to identify. I mean, there are thousands of printers across the United States, and many of them will say that we do everything. but really each printer has their unique sweet spot. We in the business have that knowledge, so I'm able to apply that knowledge, get a better deal than if it went direct in most cases, and take responsibility for the job. So that's just a practical application in marketing.
I could just say to those, over the years as a client of yours, and just in general coming out into the marketplace, people ask me a lot of times, you want to use bottom line for their, like they ask me, what do you love about bottom line design? I'll give them the list of items I like, and they say, if that's the case, like you're giving a good example, the actual printing of the business cards, you could go online and buy for cheaper.
Right.
And you know what I found is that at the end of the day, there's the whole overall look. And there's you don't want one person blaming the next person. And I found sometimes it's worth it to be part of the 10% of people where even though you don't need me for the full service, it's worth it sometimes to have that broker or in your case come to you and say, because if you come out with the printing business cards come out and it's a little bit off.
Right.
You could say, one person say it's the printer,
right.
One person say it's the design.
Right. They're blaming it.
They're blaming different people. You see advertisements, billboards. Someone thinks they can take a regular ad that they have in the newspaper and they blow it up to a billboard so it's going to be the same. They have to test. Coke goes out there and tests every single logo and every single ad and for all different sizes. You want to go with one person, you're a professional, let them deal with everything. Take the price. Don't look to nickel and dime on some of those little pieces.
And naturally, that vendor takes the responsibility and has to take it and deliver a perfect product. In your industry, and of course this applies to every industry, how important are the actual relationships with the lenders?
So that's, I think, relationships are everything. And that's, it's a foundation of trust that it's built on. And it's not just that I know which banks to bring it to, and when I call them up, they'll take my phone call. But I think that the relationship, that trust is, and, we take it to a very high compliment that a lot of bankers tell us, and we brand ourselves with the reality that our tagline is the most trusted advisor. One day I could be the number one broker, I could be the 10th broker, but trust is always going to be there. And a lender says, one thing I like about doing business with you is that I know that when I get a deal from you and I read the paper up front and you describe the situation, I know without any questions, without any doubts, what you say is what you know and what you believe. I'm not going to find out any surprises later. So that's that trust factor. When I could have a lender call me, the president of a bank call me in the middle of a loan committee and say, Ira, we have this loan. Some people arguing that they should do it, they shouldn't do it. Tell me what you know and are you comfortable? And, from everything you know, can I trust it? And to take the word and go for it, that's the gold. That's the gold at the end of the day, and that's something you never could give up on, your great name that you have and the trust factor. So that comes with relationships altogether.
Now, on that note, and I'm sure you run into this all the time, people are, I'm sure, putting pressure like, that they're fighting over every point and every percentage in a deal. I mean, how important is that? I mean, does one need to look at the overall deal? Or is it just if one is 3.99, one point 3.98? Obviously, every single percentage point adds up to money over time, the length of the deal. But is it all about the best rate? Is it all about the package? How would you define that?
So it's definitely about the whole entire package. But I do think that I think people make mistakes. Is that there's certain you want to save your fights and your battles and your negotiations for the parts that are really very important. So, like, sometimes I go into a client's office and he has a list of 20 items he wants to negotiate. I tell him, you're just going to wear out, you're going to lose the momentum. You're going to one day have a problem on your deal. You're going to one day need something from a lender. You're going into a marriage now. It's a 10-year marriage. Can I get the lender to beat up this fee a little bit more and change this? But sometimes, as a trusted advisor, I have to advise the client. I could get it for you. But is that what you really want? Do you want to be in the position from the lenders? A client wants to win. I said, okay, Mr. Client, you won. I could get you all the terms. But do you want to, win the battle, lose the war? Later on, when you have the upper hand, you're taking advantage. When the bank has the upper hand, do you want them taking advantage of you at that time or not at that time? And that's really the question that I'm coming into people and I'm telling them. The overall deal makes sense and the last detail. You want to negotiate every detail. But you want to be able to sense what's that line where you're irritating the other party. At a certain point where it's just not comfortable doing business together with you. You want to do business with people you like. You want to do business with people you trust. You want to do people you feel comfortable and people you think they're going to appreciate it. You know yourself and your business. Can I go every single time you gave me a bid and beat you up and get a little cheaper? I could. Right. But at the end of the day, I say, go off on a tangent. I say by the workers that work by me, and in general, I give advice. Look at a worker as not an expense, as an investment. If I had an employee working for me that they're negotiating with me their raise and they want an extra dollar or $2 per hour, whatever, or a dollar amount per week or per year, that little difference sometimes, I say to myself, when that worker's driving home, do you want them thinking about how they could help the business? And that difference is worth all that extra incremental money that you're putting to the table. So that's, you have to find that judgment. And that's where a lot of times I find the biggest value I find in working together with clients and with bankers. How do you bridge that difference where you both could win what you want, but is that what you really want in a relationship? Take the main points and go on, leave the other points to the side.
And if I could just follow up on what Ira just mentioned, I would strongly advise for everyone to listen, if you have a chance, to the podcast of last week's show. We had Dr. Lieberman on, Dr. David Lieberman, and he spoke about the importance of relationships. He was spending time talking about the importance of a great secretary when you walk into a business and how important and valuable it is. Just like you pointed out, it's not all about, you know, beating up on one percentage, on a point, etc., but overall, that relationship factor can never be discounted. Everyone's human. I remember talking once to a noted politician, and he said, you know, at the end of the day, when people come and lobby, etc., every politician has a family, and they go home at night, etc. Everyone's human. I'm just introducing another little aspect, but it's so true that even in the scope of a deal, be human about it. Of course, you're doing business, we understand, but be human about it, because if you go too strong, then you kind of...
Right, so I could comment on that, but, you know, that point also put things in perspective, is that, you know, in this business, it's not about percentage point. It's about basis points, meaning it's not about a 4% rate go to 3. People negotiate sometimes from 4% to 3.99, 3.98, because the deal can be in the millions of dollars. It can make a difference every little basis point. But sometimes I tell a person, step back and say, do you understand that the amount you're asking the bank for when you're putting up a fight, how much does it work out to over 10 years? It's $3,000. In the scope of a multi-million dollar deal, is it worth $3,000? So you're right. Sometimes you get in the minutiae of the negotiation, what you're negotiating on, the per thousand, the per... Step back and say, in the scope of this whole deal, that's what you're fighting on? Would you rather tell the banker, no problem, let's move on, and just to feel good that people got their, you know, like I said, he goes home to the family at night and says, listen, this is crazy. I don't want to do business with such a person.
Right. Now, I hope it's okay if I could put you on the spot for a second. With your, you know, deep knowledge of the entire real estate industry, where do you see interest rates going in the coming months?
I think interest rates are going down by 2 points. I don't know.
Really?
you know,
Pace, I'm going to have the news media outside this door.
Yeah. it's interesting. What I find is that, you know, obviously the perception is that rates are going up and rates can move in that direction. I typically tell people, if I knew the answer to the question, I'll be sitting on a beach somewhere and retired. But the reality is that, you know, my view is that rates are going up. The part that I differ, I think, from most people is that I don't think rates are going up slowly. I think that when rates are going to go up, they're going to skyrocket. Mm-hmm. Right now, you feel like the world's putting the pressure down to hold rates where they are. But the minute they lose their grip, then it just flies out. You know, everything just flies out from under it. Once it, like the balloon pops, it can explode from that point. That's what I think is going to happen. So are they going to raise rates in September now? They're talking about raising rates. A quarter of a point, they're going to raise rates. But I think once they hit the rates and it starts to move, it's going to pop. And I think another dynamic that's very important to people to look at and realize that they don't realize about how banking works is that banks are in the business of renting your money. All of you on listening have bank accounts. So cumulatively, you could have $1 billion worth of bank money in the bank. Some of you have interest in savings accounts. Some of you in checking accounts. The bank takes that $1 billion, and then they go lend that $1 billion out. So if they're paying you 1% on your money, they go out and lend it out to commercial real estate owners, car loans, whatever they lend it out to, they hedge it, $1 billion, and they collect in a 4% interest rate. They take 1% and pay it to you, and the other 3 covers their overhead and their profits. That's how they operate. Forgetting about the Fed's raising rates and forget about the Treasury bills and all other things that affect interest rates, the number one thing that affect interest rates now is that the banks that have been lending, have been growing, they need more deposits in order to grow. So if you notice, they're starting to have promotions on interest rates. They're running a CD, 1-year CD, 1%, 1.25%.
It may seem
insignificant to you, but just realize a lender making loans yesterday at 3% interest and a short-term loan at 3% and their cost of money is 1, they're making a 2% profit from 3% to 1%. You know, they raise their rates to 1.25%. They can't make so much money from 1.25% to 3%. They have to raise their rates just to pay the depositors. So that's another dynamic that people aren't realizing. The banks have to get deposits in order to lend money. So the banks that keep lending and lending and lending, they need to get deposits. That's another cause that interest rates could start moving up because the banks can't be profitable at this level.
Now, here's a question that really would affect anyone really that has purchased a property in the last 10 years could relate to. That is, especially since the collapse of the mortgage industry in 2007, banks typically will loan 70-80% of property value. How do clients come up with the balance, you know, the other 20-30%? I mean, let's say it's a million-dollar loan, for example. So still a client still has to come up with $200,000-$300,000. How do they come up with that?
So, you know, one just to go back, like one big myth is that people think that someone buys real estate typically uses his own money. It's not really true. It's other people's money. It's partnerships. And the reason why there's a lot of partnerships is because think about when someone starts, you know. I used to give a survey to people and say, if you want to understand the mindset of a real estate owner, if I told you right now that the house next door to you, where you live, you believe your house is worth $600,000. The house next door, you're friendly with the old man who lives next door, the old lady from you when you were a kid. You grew up right next to them. And they said, listen, they're looking to move and they want to leave in 2 weeks. And if you could give them $500,000 in 2 weeks cash, you could buy the house from them. You know it's worth $600,000. How are you going to run and find someone to come up with $500,000? That's not for me. What do you mean? You can make $100,000. 2 weeks? I don't know. What if? There's a certain entrepreneurial approach and attitude where someone says, you know something? I'm going to jump in and do it. What about the house was a fixer-upper? It's going to be worth $600,000 when it's refixed, but right now it needs $200,000 worth of work. If you put up $300,000, then you could put another $200,000 in. You're in for $500,000. It's worth $600,000. Then will you jump into it? That real estate person is an entrepreneurial person who takes those risks. But typically the first deal, they didn't have money. So they found another friend of theirs. They said, listen, I found a great deal. Could you put up the money? Let's go partnership. And the partnership starts by someone syndicating, putting the real estate deals together, and then they take in investors. And that's how they keep growing and as they move down the line. So in this marketplace, when someone needs money, they typically go friends and family. Most of the money is friends and family. And if you look on our website, we have a cute little video that explains it, how, you know, we opened up an equity platform.
What's the website address? I'm sorry?
EasternUF.com. It's Eastern, U for Union, F for Funding.com. Mm-hmm. And while you're on, when someone's looking to buy a piece of real estate, so using your example, he purchases a property for $1 million. The bank lends him, let's say, 80%, is 8 million. Let's say he doesn't get up to 80%, it's probably 75% on average. Okay. So he gets $750,000, plus there's some closing costs, let's say $50,000. Right. So he needs $300,000. $750,000 from the bank, $300,000 from worth of equity. So it's his own money, friends and family. And he might go out to other people and say, someone meets him, oh, you buy good deals, can I invest with you? So that's where they get their money from. The issue is there's things called mortgage brokers and there's banks. But where does someone go to on a deal that size, a deal up to $10 million or $20
million? Right.
He doesn't have the money. He doesn't have his friends.
He's got to come up with $2, $3 million.
So he only has his friends are up to $1.5 million.
Right.
How does he get the rest of the money? So there's no one that really does brokerage and introduces rich people, high net worth individuals, to people buying good real estate. There's no one who does that. Same thing in reverse. You know, we had a conversation with Forbes. They said, think about someone who's very wealthy. Not even very wealthy. He makes $1 million a year. All the way up to family offices, high net worth individuals. They won't invest in real estate. Someone's a doctor, a lawyer, professional. How does he, you know, a radio host. How do you want to invest in real estate? He said, I want to invest $50,000 in a deal, $200,000 in a deal. How do you find those deals? They don't exist. You have to invest in REITs. You have to invest in funds, crowdfunding, all these new things that are out today. So we said, you know something? We want to grow our business. What could we provide as a value add? And we opened up a division, an equity division, where we're going to match up high net worth individuals to investors that are buying real estate. And what we bring to the table is the deal flow. We work on close to 400 new transactions a month. We bring the real estate expertise and knowledge, and above all is the trust factor. So we have a real estate division headed by Mark Belsky in the office, where someone that uses us as a mortgage broker, as a service, they'll just cover the cost. I'm not looking to make any money. I don't charge a success fee. So it's just a service, a fixed service, like a marketing service. We will introduce them to high net worth individuals. So on the flip side of the coin, we tell high net worth individuals, you're looking to invest in real estate? You want to see deal flow? We'll show you deal flow that we think are financeable, that we did our own. We'll treat you like the bank. We'll tell you what we know up front. You can decide if you want to move forward, and we'll only send you the deals that match what you're looking for. So we just started this in the last 60 days. We vetted out over 500 high net worth individuals that understand exactly what they like to invest in, what the criteria is, what the details are. And we just, you know, and what happens is the process is very simple. Deal comes in, we underwrite it. It says this deal, the person needs $1 million. He's willing to take checks of $100,000 a clip or $50,000 even, smaller checks. This is the return. We narrow down our list of 500 to 176 that match the criteria, and we send an email out to them. Yesterday, was the record for us, showing where the technology is going. Until now, we got responses. A few people respond with questions. They set up meetings and whatever they do between them themselves. So we're not taking any money from them. We're not causing a thorn in anyone's side. We introduce the two people, let them make their own deals amongst themselves so that the high net worth individual can meet the sponsor themselves. Yesterday was the first time someone responded straight, "I would like to make an investment." They said the amount they want to invest. Say, "Please send me the paperwork." They didn't want to meet anyone first. They don't want to speak to anyone. They just got comfortable that from the package itself. That's the, you know, that's the world where technology is going. So that this was a big helped our clients and our business, because high net worth from the client side, they're doing a deal. Now they say, "Oh, I have a choice to come to Eastern or another firm. I'll help them also with introducing them to partners. That's a value-added service. And I'm not charging them a huge commission," which some people try to charge. And for the high net worth individuals, we started getting more mortgage business because...
Correct. So, you had an easy answer to fill the gap.
Right. And but the investors say, "Listen, Ira, you know something? You just helped this. You know, I see the way you're doing your mortgage deals. I invest with someone else who doesn't use you. And I told them the services you do, and it comes full circle around." So that's the... And that's what we're helping on both sides of the coin. Like, that's what Forbes came back to us and said, "Listen, this is a huge value, because people doing crowdfunding, who's watching over them?
Right.
There's a problem. There are one little slug in everything. Over here, you're making an introduction. Two people meet, make whatever deal they want amongst themselves."
Wow, incredible. We're going to just give some station ID here, and then Pesach will join me on the next question. We're speaking with Ira Zlotowicz, president of Eastern Union Funding, here on the Mind Your Business radio program on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. Of course, I want to give a special thank you to all those, literally hundreds of people, who have reached out to me, have given very constructive feedback and compliments on the show. It's appreciated and definitely is making the show a much more improved experience for the listeners. It's easy to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can follow me on Twitter. And, of course, on Twitter and Facebook is where we put out as soon as we know which high-profile guests we're going to be landing on any given week. Also, if you go to WABCBizRadio.com, it features a link to all the podcasts. You could hear the incredible interviews with Dr. Lieberman, with Jessica Proud, Bill O'Reilly, and Josh Moore of Uber, who we had on a few weeks ago. And we'll also have some pictures. Everyone always loves to see pictures. We know how big Instagram is these days. And that is all up there on our social media feed. Pesach, the next one that we want to turn to Ira is the idea about the seismic shifts in the industry. Maybe you want to explain that and pitch. Let's hear Ira's take on that. Throughout every industry today. You know, the seismic shifts. Remember, a couple of weeks ago we had Josh Moore on. So
Everything's changing. And even as we just heard a second ago from Ira, that with this equity platform, it sounds exactly like the Airbnb of mortgages or of equity or of commercial real estate, whatever that, you know, how that would categorize. But it's that concept of creating a platform or technology or a service that seamlessly connects people on the opposite ends of the spectrum and provides value to both ends.
Right.
And in general, I mean, everything is we keep on bringing this up because it's such a popular topic of what a company can do in an evolving marketplace to disrupt what's currently happening, to say, okay, things have been done one way for so long. Let's kind of, as you would say, shake the Etch-a-Sketch,
right,
and turn it on its head and revisit and rethink the process from bottom up.
Right. So, I mean, I guess the question is, in your industry, has there been any type of challenge in general? And then we'll get to how Eastern Union perhaps has dealt with it.
So I think that the challenge we have in our industry, we're not living in our own little planet that we have no issues. We're living in the same world as everybody else. And I really found that, you know, when you're in a situation where the people that have been in the business for a while tell you this is just the way it is, you know this big change coming. Mm. And it can never change because there's big change coming. And I think that that's really where, I try to coin the term, I don't want to be Uberized or Netflixed out of my own business. I want to be part of the Netflix and Uber. And you watch a lot of the old school companies. We're fortunate enough to be the eighth largest firm in the country by dollar amount, second largest in transactions. And we made a tough decision internally also and said, listen, we see the trends. The trends are that data and technology is so readily available. You could, you know, someone showed me an app. You could be sitting in, I don't have the name of the app, but you could be sitting in a building anywhere in New York, and you just type in who owns this building. And it tells you the owner and all the information about the property. There's a lot of information about every mortgage is recorded. So if somebody wants to know who did loans in his neighborhood, he could track it down. So people go to Zillow when you're talking about for residential. They have those equivalents for commercial. It's a little more complicated because owners buy it under an LLC, not a person's name. But today, technology is piercing the corporate veil and finding information out. So when I walk into a borrower, going back to what I said before, the borrowers more and more are saying, the main value you bring me, I'm a sophisticated guy, the guy tells me. I can negotiate deals. I'm aggressive. Mm-hmm. I have an attorney who could help me. Mm-hmm. You know the banks. You have relationships with the banks. Now it's, you know something? You don't have to know the banks. I know who's hot. I went online and I ran this report. There's a program, there's a company selling this service, and I'm coming to clients that are more knowledgeable, and that's why the fees have been dropping. You know, some of the brokers have been in the business as long as I've been or longer are saying, no, it's not true. The reality is more and more clients are going direct. More and more clients are negotiating the fees on the larger transactions. And it's telling something that there's a certain certain comfort level that they have in order to go ahead and do that business. So are we a product? The more knowledgeable they are, the more comfortable they are, the more banks are hiring people, the bankers are also use technology. They also are more knowledgeable of what's going on and catching when, you know, some advantage a broker used to have is he used to know when the mortgages are coming due. So he only calls borrowers, oh, your loan's maturing, let me call you. That's public information now. Borrowers get that information, reminders from the lenders themselves as they're doing business. So we're not sheltered from the rest of the world, and that's what's affecting our business. Technology is making that big change for our business.
Now, you had talked about, of course, the equity division, but is there a specific technology that you can share with the public that Eastern Union is using or developing, et cetera, or is that not the public information?
So it is public information. I believe in living in a world where full transparency.
Okay.
And that's where the trust gets built. We probably have the most sophisticated real estate technology from any firm. We're handling the second most number of transactions a month we work on from any firm, and probably new clients. We're number one in new business in America today, new business. And we developed a technology in house. We spent millions of dollars developing it. And it's funny when you see these tech companies come into real estate and they show the technology. Our technology is a little more sophisticated than some of these that are coming out.
Wow.
But we have artificial intelligence in our technology. We have a patent pending on where this system, people ask us, how do you send so many deals to banks? They don't get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out a system on how to send it to a lender. We don't use an email. We have a portal we built. And, you know, someone came out to send me an email. Ira, you came out the first portal. Now Wells Fargo, I think, is advertising to have a portal. Our technology allows the banks, we could send a deal to a lender without sending out an email. They could just log onto a portal based on the criteria, what they like to look at. They'll see the deal. They could put a quote there. They could reject the loan. They could access more documents. And we have a patent pending on that layout. So a lender doesn't have to waste 3 hours to say no to a deal. We put the pertinent information right up front. On the flip side of the coin, we have the same technology we could give to every borrower. If a borrower today wants to track the loan he's working on and track the rest of his loans when they're maturing, we have that same technology. For the equity platform, the high net worth mm-hmm. individuals, we'll have another 2 weeks. They'll be able to log in. Instead of getting an email of the deals, they could see all the deals and make an offer online.
Wow.
So it's one piece of technology that comes through. Allows us, we deal with like 400 or 350 lenders. We close with 75 in the last year. How are we tracking every tidbit? So the technology is artificial intelligence. It will tell the broker, listen, you have this deal. You want to send it to these, like when you go to Amazon and it tells mm-hmm. you know, what other people bought this, also bought, mm-hmm. or liked, also liked. It does the same technology. It tells us this deal is best suited for these four lenders. But just know, even though in this area, there's another lender did a deal in the last 2 weeks we do business with. You might want to send it to them. Or there's a new lender just starting. They're not active yet, but based on the newest, what they were describing, they might be a good source to do it. So we have this technology built in play that it's allowing us to be able to grow the company, and as we're growing, not need as many people to go with the growth. So as we increased our staff now, you know, in the Crane's interview, they asked, you know, you went from 90 brokers, very nice, you're the fastest growing firm, but how many brokers did you go to? We had to look up the number, and it went from 91 to 35. And I said, because we're able to, the technology allowed the brokers by us to be a lot smarter. And also, by the fact they could handle more business, when they walked into a lender and they shook a lender's hand, they were able to talk about 12 or 15 deals, and at the fingertips had the pieces of pertinent information. And as they updated it from the lender's office, the clients that were logging in saw it direct, and everyone else that's working on the transaction got the right updates. A deal dies, it leaves everyone's screen. You don't find out 3 weeks later, oh, the deal died? Whatever happened? Mm-hmm. If it gets killed, the deal gets killed across the board.
Mm. Now, if it's okay, we would like to also really also accommodate all of our listeners, not everyone's in the real estate business, and pick your brain about some other business advice that would be on people's minds. And again, this show, the Mind Your Business program on AM 770 WABC, is all about practical business and marketing advice, and therefore we want to leverage your incredible knowledge in the business world. By the way, just before we go further, just a couple of shout-outs. Of course, thank you to George Flowers behind the board, Pesach Tropper, the producer of the show, and Iran, your team also. You have a great executive assistant, right?
Anna.
And
Shmicho is here at the right time.
Yes, and anyone else in particular?
There's a whole team. I look at it that it's one team. You started with one executive assistant, so I'm going to mention the name and give a shout-out and thank her for putting everything together, but it's the whole entire team and everyone working together. And once I start with one, I'll have to mention all 100.
Okay, so I'm also going to mention Miriam Saftless, my executive assistant. Thank you very much for being here and getting everything set up. Okay, question. Being in business since 2001, your company has been through the ups and downs and some pretty strong recessions, including, of course, the 2007, the 2011 one. That was pretty serious. And especially for the real estate industry, it wiped out many players. What advice could you give to anyone in business, kind of how to be prepared for that rainy day?
So if I can give, say a short story.
Sure.
And I never verified it. So I can't say how authentic it is, but I think that it's authentic, and definitely it's going to resonate, and this helped me as well. Mm-hmm. They say that ExxonMobil, which is, I think that Apple, fights with them for being the number one, the largest market cap in any business in the United States. They, in the 1950s, supposedly the president of the company made a retreat. He invited all the executives out onto a retreat. And he said, oil was trading about $50 a barrel. And he says, I'm dividing up into groups of three. One-third of you are going to write a business plan assuming oil goes to $90 a barrel. One will stay as if it stays forever at $50. And the third one, if oil went to $20 a barrel, and write a business plan. What should the company do if these are the scenarios? And they're all sitting debating it. It's never going to go. But if it went to $90, we could afford more investments in this, this, and this. If it went to $20, we're going to have to cut here and here. If it stayed at $50, we can run certain efficiencies and go back and forth. At the end of the retreat, he took the three business plans, put into his drawer, and life went on. When the embargo came, oil went up to $80, $90 a barrel. They were the only business that had a thought-out business plan from the executives on how to execute at oil at $80 a barrel. When everything was cleaned up, it went down to $20, they had a business plan, and then at $50. A lot of times you run the same stress test in the office. We figured out that by us, it's all about a conversion rate. We figured out that it's not about how many deals I close this month. It's how many deals I put on their application. What percent go from application? What percent applications are new submissions? And we have a conversion rate. So we run analysis all the time to say, what is our cost per submission? Mm-hmm. What happens if it goes up? What if it goes down? What if we go from 400 a month to 600 a month? We go down to 200 a month. And we have thought out plans how to deal with it. So while we're making moves as we're going down the line, obviously you can't prepare for everything. And you get the same thing at lenders. Lenders have what they call stress tests. You go into a bank, they'll tell you, we assume what happens if interest rates went to 6%. Would it be out of business? We'd not be out of business. Interest rates went to 1%, what would happen? And they run all those stress tests accordingly to be able to run and operate their business.
Great advice. Wow, unbelievable advice. Eastern Union, on another point, this has to do with running a large staff. Eastern Union has offices in multiple states. And, of course, you run deals across the United States in general. But specifically, with all your different branches, how does your company avoid kind of personnel overlap? And also, how do you avoid duplicity on action? If someone's working on a deal, so then obviously you don't want to have multiple people working on the same action item. How do you kind of work that all out with having multiple locations?
So there's two things. The first thing, and we have in the office works with us, there's Jews and non-Jews work. Mm-hmm. And we, you can't speak and use Jewish words in our business. But there's one word we taught throughout the company. It's called being a mensch. Mm-hmm. And a mensch is not just being honest, it's not just being nice, it's everything all-encompassing. And the first thing is, that's the first thing. The first thing is, when you're going to approach something, you know, I'll take a lot of pride that if you walked into my office at any time, you would not be able to tell that to Salesforce. You'd not be able to tell that people are competing against each other and there's a cutthroat attitude. There's no cutthroat attitude. You feel like you're walking into like a family type of environment. And when an issue does come up, deal with it as a mensch would deal with it first. That's one. Then second, we could have all the rules in place. And the rules we put in place, technology helps us. Because everyone uses the same central system, and they could use access from their devices, from the office, they could call in, someone could help them out, is that it starts at that source. It doesn't make a difference what office they're in. I could open up an office all over the country. We have offices here, and have offices in Israel, and I could open up many more offices or shrink down offices. It's all about the people connected to their system they're connected to. So once a name is given to you, or you take a name, and you put your name, you link that you're the sales rep on it, then that's where the overlap starts and stops. It's not about offices, it's about the name. But again, if you don't stop by being a mensch first, then you have rules. People try to put rules first, and then everything else separate, that didn't work for us.
You know, in last week's interview with Dr. Lieberman, that was one of, we squarely asked him, what's the single most important element to look for in hiring someone? And I'm not sure if he used the word mensch. I think he did. But he definitely talked
character.
About character. That was the key word. He said character.
So character is all-encompassing of all these things.
Correct. And that's a great perspective you have there, that if the character is there, people will get, you know, will work it out. They'll just work together and work it out. Back in December, you presented at the Winning Edge Executive Business Conference hosted by Bottom Line Marketing Group, and the topic that you presented on was double your staff's production, triple your profits. Perhaps you could share some advice on that subject.
So I think that, you know, a little bit I touched on before, being in real estate, it got me, you know, to watch people that own a building that could be in a terrible neighborhood or a terrible building. But if they figure out that in one apartment, if they'd invest a few more dollars, they could get more rent, they don't look at the whole picture. You know, my mom always told me, look for the best in people. And when I hire staff, I hire staff in the office by me, and I look at them as not an expense, but as an investment. And I say, I'm paying you $50,000. If I paid you, can I get away with paying you $45,000? Probably. But if I was able to get you to be worth $60,000, if I'm making 2-to-1 ratio, that means I made $60,000. If I get you worth $70,000. So how can I make that investment in that person to take them to the next level? And the biggest thing I, you know, with that went together is that, you know, everybody has strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And the key thing is to surround yourself by people that their strengths and weaknesses balance each other. So don't look, people try to fix their weaknesses. I say don't fix your weaknesses. Mm. Polish your strengths. Mm. And find someone that has that opposite that's going to get things going. You want to mention before, you know, that a lot of times you have salespeople, that when they work as salespeople, they're not that organized. They're never going to become organized. They're better off finding someone to get a great executive assistant that's going to make sure that they're organized so they could focus on the things that they're great at. And between those two, balancing it out, look for the best in people, and nurture that best with them, and let them know that you appreciate the value. Listen, working with you in the shop, I remember when, you know, we were just starting out and we wanted accounts and things tomorrow, like you said it before here, people have a regular life after they go to work. And just because it's important to me doesn't mean that someone in your staff has to stay overnight to get things done. Will you accommodate if it's needed? But it should come from the person wants to help, not because it's an expectation that because you're paying someone, therefore you control the person. That person has a life and a family first, and they want to be in a healthy relationship and a business relationship as well.
Amazing advice from Iris Ladowitz here, the president of Eastern Union Funding. How does someone get in touch? I would imagine, you know, hopefully through this interview, a lot of people are going to want to get in touch with Eastern Union. How would they go about that?
So obviously I gave him my website before, easternuf.com, mm-hmm. but I am I try to be accessible to my whole, client base and bankers, and I give out my cell number. And my cell number is 917-597-2197, 917-597-2197.
Now that is unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe he gave it out on the air here.
Anna might be upset how many calls she has to now make sure that I return. But I could tell you with my emails, like I said then, I'll give my email address is IRAZ for Zlotowicz at easternuf.com. And one thing I can tell you, my inbox, I go through every email before I go to sleep. And I don't save emails. My inbox probably has, by the time I go to sleep, maybe 6, and that's a lot. And I follow, take care of things that have to get taken care of. So, you know, if someone has a question that they think I could be of assistance, either from something mentioned here or in the mortgage business itself, I will respond to every single email. If I did not respond, it's because I did not receive your email. I will respond to every email.
Now, we're not doing the final sign-off yet. I just want to do a quick recap with Pesach here on everything we've kind of gone through. Pesach, kind of what would you say is the most memorable part of this?
I'm going to have to go with the $2 bill. My question really is that do you have to meet you to get the $2 bill, or someone could call you and you'll send it in the mail also?
You know, we think about if you send me a self-addressed envelope.
with the stamp?
With the stamp.
So then it's $1.50, right? Basically.
We should run a promotion here. The next 10 people are calling.
I'm afraid what's going to be with your cell phone, especially heading into 12 o'clock.
It's starting to buzz already.
Unreal. As we approach the close of tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, of course, I must give a special thank you to Ira Zlotowicz, president of Eastern Union Funding. His incredible perspective gave our listeners right here on the Mind Your Business program on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com some really incredible insight and knowledge on how to get ahead in today's business world. If you have questions or comments or ideas for an upcoming show, feel free to reach out to us. And I would say the best way to do that is actually on the special website, WABCBizRadio.com. We have received a number of questions and ideas through it, besides the many other, as I mentioned before, the hundreds of people that have reached out with advice and tips, and I appreciate that. The web address is WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. In addition, on that website, there is there's already a library of all the podcasts of previous shows. You could hear the interview with Bill O'Reilly and Jessica Proud, all about incredible communication secrets and tips and strategies. Last week we had Dr. David J. Lieberman, incredible interview talking about hiring secrets and working with a staff and interaction, etc. That was a great interview. Of course, our initial show was with we featured Josh Moore, the general manager of Uber, and we know that Uber just scored a big victory in their whole situation with the city of New York, and that was incredible that we had Josh Moore on. And of course, his interview is also available as a podcast by going to WABCBizRadio.com. That's the special website dedicated for this program. Well, as we approach the close, we're going to ask a question that we ask of every guest and interviewee. Any final thoughts for our audience of the Mind Your Business program?
I want to first thank you very much for having me here.
Please, it's an honor.
An honor is mine. I could just say really three points that I think that, different than what was mentioned here. Mm-hmm. Your name is the only thing that you have. And you want to make sure never do anything to lose out on that name. The second thing is my motto is live for today without sacrificing tomorrow. You get sometimes a lot of decisions that you have to go ahead and make. Should you take this, not take it? Sometimes you want to say, which one, if I made a mistake, can I still go back? And which one am I betting the house, so to speak? Live for today without sacrificing tomorrow. You see people make moves that benefit them for right now. They don't take what's going to be in 10 minutes, 10 years, 10 hours, and how is it going to play out if it doesn't work. Live for today. And the last thing I find is a lot of people do herd mentality. When you're making a decision for your life, don't just follow what other people are doing. Fact find first. Ask people. Surround yourself by people that are going to push back at you. It's easy for me to surround myself by people that are yes, yes people. The first requirement to work by me in an inner circle is you have to be someone who's going to tell me no, you're going to push back. Because if someone ever says yes, yes, and then I find that later they just didn't want to argue, then there's no room in the relationship for that. So it's fact find when you have to make decisions in life. But ultimately make a decision. Live for today without sacrificing tomorrow. You might make a little bit of the second best decision. But if it's a mistake, you could live with it, then the best decision for today. But if it doesn't work, what are you going to do with your life from there? So again, I wanted to thank you very, very much for having me. And like I said, you have my cell phone number, everybody. You have an email.
That was
any
incredible.
Questions?
I couldn't believe you'd give me that on the air like that.
Thank you very much.
It's a real daring person. Ira Zlotowicz, really, thank you very much for joining us here in live in studio on the Mind Your Business program. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Well, that was just really one incredible interview here on the Mind Your Business program. Pesach, any final thoughts as we come into the close?
Just so much we can take away from someone who's built such an incredible company.
Operation, yeah. Really incredible. And as we always point out, the advice here is free when you tune into this program. We really probably should have some type of fee. And also the podcasts from the previous shows are all out there. It's there because on this program, the point is that it's about real people, real businesses, real advice, and the strategies and suggestions to get you ahead in the business world. Well, as we close out, a reminder, you could follow me on various social media platforms. You could connect with me on LinkedIn, Yitzchak Saftlis. You could follow me on Twitter. You could like me on Facebook. And, of course, through these platforms, that's how we inform the public for the incredible stars that we are going to be having in the upcoming weeks. I can't share yet, but the next week's interview is probably going to be someone that is just off the charts, as we had this week. And that's something that we will share on our social media feeds. So again, we thank everyone for tuning in right here on 77 WABC. This is the weekly program that gives you advice and tips to get ahead in the business world. Tune in again next Sunday night at 77 WABC to the Mind Your Business program. Thank you again.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.